mentioned that it's commonly very technologically advanced.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty good.
Whenever Remy is ready to...
Oh, yeah, okay. I thought we again, I'm sorry I'm a little late, but I'll try to say something for a few minutes on... just put it around here,
and I have to...
Oh, okay.
It's already on.
Oh, it's already on? So I'll just say something like this. Does it really make a difference as opposed to sitting on the desk, or maybe one time we'll try it just... It feels kind of silly, but... Okay, so we'll... okay. The gets us very quickly. This week's parsha is going to be Parsha's Shalach, and this is a very bit of a puzzle in the beginning of the parsha when we read about the Meraglin. If you look at the Medrash, we have conflicting views whether this was an ill-fated mission from the outset. It never really had a chance. It was always doomed to failure. Or on the contrary, this was something which had potential. Either perspective, of course, is problematic in terms of the conflicting evidence, but if you look at the Medrash, there seem to be different perspectives. A, was this a lechatchila b'di'eved? B, you know, could it have worked? Obviously, if it was a lechatchila, it could have worked. Even if it was a b'di'eved, it might have been able to have accomplished something, or at least to have been neutral. But what's particularly interesting is that if you look at individual Mefarshim and even Rashi, you already get the conflicting evidence, conflicting signals. Rashi says right in the beginning, Shlach lecha anashim, lama nisukha parshas meraglim, shaloksal iske, they saw the story of Miriam and Aaron, particularly Miriam, shaloksal iske diba, and rishom alalu rova lakhu musar. So you could say that that's all, you know, in retrospect, but it sounds like it's more than that. But even more significant is that Rashi thinks that some of the things that are definitely prospective and not retrospective already imply that this was being undertaken in an improper spirit. But that's, again, side by side with evidence that the best possible and noblest possible people were chosen. Shlach lecha, again, ledatcha, ani einim mitzavelecha im tirsa shalach, right? And Rashi explains this again based on the Medrash that the Ribbono Shel Olam is giving them every opportunity, you know, to make a mistake. The next pasuk again, Rashi al pi Hashem birshusa shel ikei val yado. On the other hand, it's kulam anashim kol anashim shebemikra lashem chashivos oso shah ksheirim hayu. So Rashi taking the position that they were proper, noble, good people at this point in time. On the other hand, Vayikra Moshe Lo'Shea, Nispalalav Koyo Shiacha Me'atzas Miragli. So, which is it? I mean, this isn't in retrospect, this is in prospect. He's analyzing the people in front of him. We just said our Anashim, Chashuvim, Adayin K'sherim Heim. And Moshe Rabbeinu, again, is given the choice to accept this idea or not to accept this idea, right? Even if it is a b'di'eved, but he could still say no, and he says yes. So he says yes. There are chashuvim. They are the rashi matos, as we then explain, right? Vayishachosam al pi Hashem kulam anashim rashi b'nei Yisrael ema elu shemosam. Some of the farshim say whenever you have elu shemosam, it's again a sign of individual prominence, not just the fact that in terms of their function and their authority that they were the heads of the matos. That's always a certain dialectic, you know, how much for the, you know, for the job and how much for the personality. So there's evidence that, you know, that Moshe Rabbeinu is positive about all of this. He's willing to take the chance that he's entrusting the right kind of people. And at the same time, he's, you know, already trying to save Yehoshua in advance. It's connected to the story of Diba in Miriam, though that might, I admit, that might be retrospective. And not only that, but again, the same Rashi is telling us that it was mitchila v'yad sof, that this is, you know, when they came back and they, you know, spread the Diba about Eretz Yisrael. So Rashi says, it's the same people who left. They were Rishayim when they left. They were Rishayim when they came back. And this goes throughout. If you look at Chazal and I say, even if you can pin down individual mafarshim, like Rashi, it seems like the mixed signals are intentional here. That we're being told at the same time, this is doomed, it's possible. The people are appropriate, the people are lacking, they're flawed. So which is it? So what I'd like to suggest is that maybe a hint to what's going on can be found in the language later on of Kalev. When Kalev reports, so number one, he quiets everybody down and he uses this tactic of apparently criticizing Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayas Kalev Asa'am, Es Moshe, Vayomer Alo Na'ale V'Yarashnu Osa Ki Yachal Nuchala. So Kalev, who's the contrast, obviously, serves as the contrast to the rest of the Meraglim. Not only does he give an optimistic report, but he gives a really idealistic, optimistic, even apparently unrealistic, optimistic, idealistic report. Olo nale yarashni osa ki yachal nuchala. It's almost like Kalev is saying, it's true what they're saying, you know, the facts are correct, but man with vision will see that this is possible. But the language that's used in the Torah here, olo nale, is reminiscent of the language that the Torah uses in the end of Devarim, when we're told about, whether it's Talmud Torah or Tshuva, whatever it is that's going to be the key to Klal Yisrael's development, lo b'shamayimi, lo b'eber layam, v'ficho v'vavcha la'soso, ki ha'mitzvah hazos. So we're told that this is doable, and even if it had not been doable in such an easy way, if even it wasn't b'fichal b'vav chalasoso, we're still told that nonetheless we would have been obligated to pursue this path. And the Torah uses language, which I say is very, very close to And Rashi, quoting the Gemara in Erevin, explains she'ilo ha'isa b'shamayim ha'isa tzarech la'alos achareha ulalamda. So Kalev is essentially invoking this same perspective, which is, this is doable. And not only is it doable, but even if it wasn't doable, it would be doable. Because what's at stake is so crucial that even if the reality that we encounter is one which, you know, again, realistically is going to be ma'akev, it's our job to change that reality. Our idealism and our optimism has the capacity to do that. And since it has that capacity, so then we have the obligation as well. So I think in these psukim, which echo that parsha later on in the end of Devarim, in the Tzavim, Kalev is basically saying that the chisaron of the Meraglim is that they're being too realistic, and that they're assessing and evaluating, you know, based on standard criteria. And from that point of view, I think we could look back at the beginning of the parsha and understand what's going on. Essentially, the request of the Kal Yisrael to send Meraglim was a reasonable one and a realistic one from the perspective of, you know, any nation about to embark on a new chapter and a new journey, embark into the unknown. And from that point of view, it was very reasonable. Point is that the Rabbeinu Sholem's ambivalence wasn't a function of the unreasonable claim per se, but the fact that they were operating on the basis of this standard of the realistic and the rational. After all, considering what they had been through and what they had experienced, it would have been more realistic for them to be idealistic than for them to be pragmatic, if one could say such a thing. And that's where the disappointment came into play, except that when people request reasonable things, right, even if there's some measure of disappointment, so we're not so willing to turn our back on them or to turn down the request. So Rabbeinu Shalom says, listen, Maybe they'll experience Eretz Yisrael, and then the idealism will kick in. Then the notion that this isn't going to be evaluated and defined by pragmatic standards as usual, that will occur to them, and it can still end up being good. So I'll give them the pischon peh to undercut their own mission, but it's not doomed to failure. On the contrary, it's still possible to salvage this. But Moshe Rabbeinu also understood that this request, while being realistic and not one that he could turn down as a responsible political leader, was problematic in that it reflected already this more realistic and not idealistic orientation, which given, as I say, that experience that they had already had was more than a disappointment, was already kind of a failure and a flaw. But he felt that nonetheless it was his obligation to pursue this matter. The Netziv is a very interesting line in HaMikdavar, where he says that this is also a new phase for Klal Yisrael. It was, you know, now that, you know, they were going to start, conducting life as a real nation, away from the Nisim and Niflos that were the daily diet of the nation until now. And I think we're going to add that from that point of view, again, Moshe Rabbeinu felt, listen, this isn't good for them. It could end up being disastrous, but, you know, since we're moving into this other perspective, so the fact is that we have to let it play out. And therefore, he decided to pick the best people that he could, but to let this go forward. At the same time, the disappointment already was such that he pulled Yoshua aside and he said, Ka Yoshiacha, you should be saved from this whole perspective, this whole orientation. So from that point of view, it really is both things at the same time. It's Anashim, they were the Chashuvim, they were the right ones to pick, they were the leaders, and deservedly so. But at the very same time, as it turns out, especially in Lamafreya, Igloi Milsa Lamafreya, that they were really not up to that kind of spiritual leadership. And that the Diba, which in this case doesn't have to be a function of evil at all, I mean, on the contrary, these are people who were, who had credentials and who had been tested as leaders, and they had done, an exemplary job. But the point is that to rise to the occasion that was needed, and given the context, I say, of idealism that was required, it turns out that, they weren't fit for the job to begin with. So that there's this dialectic going forward. Let them have the opportunity to fail. Let play out this greater sense of national and human responsibility. But at the very time, same time, a certain skepticism, and not just that it turned out bad, but igloi milsa l'mafreya, that it was bad, mitchila v'yad sa'o. And that's, of course, contrasted with Yoshua, and especially Kalev, who, even at the end, even after everything is over, is able to say, olo na'ale ki'yochol nuchal, again invoking that idealism that, had it been b'shamayim, we would scale shamayim as well, even though that seems impossible. It's really karov hadavar la'soso, but if it wasn't, it wouldn't matter anyway. No obstacles, no impediments, can keep back an idea that is truly compelling. And in this sense, I once wanted to liken the idea of leadership and seizing spiritual opportunities when that does not occur. So we don't view that simply as an act of omission. You don't say, there was an opportunity here and it was lost. Because the stakes are much too high, especially because, if the Netziv is correct, this was the beginning of a new era. So the opportunity to set the tone for that new era was crucial as well. And just simply failing to rise to the occasion is no longer just a failure. It ends up being an act of destruction. Again, Mashal Ma'adav Adomer said in the past, the Rambam Shita about, Poshea Kemazik, which we have in other areas of Halacha too. But it's just a very dramatic one. The Rambam says that, when a person gives you something to watch in Yerusha Machinam, so if you're negligent, so Poshea is Kemazik. tried to explain that, objectively speaking, you know, realistically, one could say, a posheya is a grama. I mean, you're not doing your job, and as a result, the object gets destroyed. But when people invest trust in you, and they rely upon you, and then you're negligent, so the combination of the expectation and the opportunity to shine, and the disappointment of, you know, not rising to the occasion, ends up creating a status of mazik. And in that sense, because it wasn't the perspective of ki'olo, nale, ki'yochol, nuchala, of Kalev, the realism of the miraglim wasn't just a failure to rise to the occasion, it ended up being an act of destruction, one which, obviously, had enormous impact on the history of Klal Yisrael, l'dorei doros. And for that reason, we're very unforgiving about the miraglim, even though we think that until that point in time, they were reputable people, even admirable leaders. But when it came to making that choice, making idealism the standard instead of realism at a particularly crucial juncture in Jewish history, because they failed, Igloi Milsa L'Mafreya, that when they left, they were already flawed as when they returned. And of course, this is a lesson to us all, because we live in a very, very pragmatic kind of world. And even the idealistic institutions and structures that we are connected with are very influenced by this strong sense of pragmatism. And we sometimes, you know, limit our horizons as a result. And in most cases, it just, you know, deprives us of opportunities. But in the case of leadership and the ability to impact on others or to change Klal Yisrael's destiny, not being idealistic and making that your realism, in some cases, constitutes an act of hezek like that of the miraglim. It's really something that we should all reflect upon going forward. Okay. Yeah.
Granted that, you know, Yeshua, to some extent, chose, you know, his position as the prime talmid of Moshe Rabbeinu, but going in, didn't he have less of a nisayon? Because, meaning, the sort of education and the sort of orientation that he went up with meant that he most likely would not, you know, be land in the sort of
the Afal Pichein, it's interesting, again, the Koya Shiacha Meat Sasa Miraglim, even then Moshe Rabbeinu was protective of him. I think it's very fascinating if you look at the story of the Miraglim, again, at the role of Kalev as opposed to the role of Yehoshua. In a certain sense, Kalev shines more than Yehoshua, right? And he isn't given the extra protection of a change of name. And, you know, again, the idealism that implies, I think, again, putting Shem Hashem in the middle of your name, in the case of Yehoshua, and in the beginning letters of your name in particular, is, I think, also a way to, you know, to emphasize the qualities that I was speaking of. That's making idealism you're really defining your name by the first letters, Ka, Shem Hashem. So I think it's very fascinating that the role of Kalev, in a way, is more prominent in the story, in this part of the story, than Yehoshua, and in terms of his reward and so on, and maybe that's because of your Ha'ara, which is that it's even more impressive that Kalev was able to muster this idealism. He didn't have that kind of relationship that we know of with Moshe Rabbeinu. He didn't get the extra assistance of the name change and the symbol of what that name change was about. And yet, on his own, he felt it. Again, Chazal say, you know, that he's the one who went to Hebron, you know, by himself, and he sensed it from the very beginning. On the other hand, it's not a contest, and I think we're just, you know, saying about Yehoshua that his behavior was very admirable, and maybe the Bussar Haskell there is that as much training as a person gets, and, you know, even with the Shinui Hashem and so on, he still deserves a lot of credit because a certain peer pressure. You know, when you go with you know, a big group and everybody has a certain view, you know, it's still very difficult to buck the trend. And with all the training and the experience of Moshe Rabbeinu, again, the pragmatism and realism is a very powerful force. And especially when it's a force that we don't completely dismiss which is part of the dialectic that we were describing before too. Moshe Rabbeinu said, okay, well, we'll go this route. So what I'm saying is, I think your Ha'orah is good. I think the special role that Kalev plays in this particular parsha, maybe even more so than Yehoshua, reflects that. The Af al pi kein, it's always possible to falter even when you're Yehoshua with all of these things, which is why Yehoshua is given credit for this parsha as well.
I think we might provide a lot of effects. I've heard this foreigner said that the reason why we see Yehoshua used as Yehoshua's name previously in the Tanakh as opposed to like Abraham and Abram is because Yehoshua was the name that Moshe Rabbeinu called him, in private. Always,
right.
At this point, just,
it became... Publicized it. That's as far as it says. Very good. That's who he always was, also.
Right.
Okay, anyways, so much for that. Let's move on now to, or back to...
Sorry.